This is Barron's Live. Each weekday, we bring you live conversations from our newsrooms about what's moving the market right now. On this podcast, we take you inside those conversations, the stories, the ideas, and the stocks to watch so you can invest smarter. Now, let's dial in.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Barron's Live Market Watch Edition. I'm Quentin Fortrell, Personal Finance Editor at MarketWatch, and I'm very pleased today to welcome my friend, Frances Ballantyne. Welcome, Frances, and thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Oh, our pleasure. So Frances has seen and done a lot in her 90-plus years. You're 96 years old. I think I might have made you a year older, in the social media. But Frances is going to explain how she's managed her money, weathered crises, and been able to live comfortably into her 90s. Frances, first of all, I wanted to ask you, how has the last 18 months been for you? You're wearing glasses, I should say, because the light hurts your eyes and you're blind. So so that obviously has been another complication for you living during the pandemic. So how's it been?
You know, the pandemic has not been as difficult for me. I've never been bored. I am very, very fortunate in that I have a lot of people and a telephone. Unfortunately, I don't have the other electronic devices, but I do have the telephone. I've had a lot of trouble with it. That made it more interesting and exciting, I guess. But people have been very helpful, very kind. And as I say, I've not been bored. I've listened to books and I knit. How about that?
That's great. I mean, you know, a lot of people have found it very difficult. So I find that very encouraging that with all of the restrictions and, you know, you weren't outside for a long time. So that's very inspiring. You know, we're living in very strange times in the middle of a pandemic, and you've lived through the Great Depression, the Second World War, the assassination of JFK, the Vietnam War, civil rights movements of the movement of the 1960s, New York in the 1980s when it was the center of the AIDS crisis, the last pandemic the world had experienced before COVID-19, and now you live on the Upper West Side of New York. So my question to you is, what has been the most disturbing or unusual time that you've lived through in your lifetime?
You know, I think probably the most disturbing was the McCarthy era, because I did not have hope. I had a hard time getting hope out of that. In the other hard periods, somehow I was able to have hope. And so that was hard on me.
Right. And I know I'm going to ask.
I was about to say that I'm sure that part of my getting through the pandemic the way I have is because I do have hope that things are going to be better and that we will be able to overcome this.
And I know that I asked in our research, I was talking to you about the biggest non-political event that has been the most disturbing or strange that you've lived through.
No, I don't.
My memory is that you said COVID. You thought maybe because we're living through it right now.
Right.
But that was a strange. But I wanted to ask you, Frances, what it was like growing up in the Great Depression, and how did that influence your attitude to money?
And it's very interesting to ask about that. My attitude toward money was that it was important to have it, but that there were other things that I learned from it through through the people joining one another and helping one another. I had a mother who was very proud, so it was difficult for her to ask for help, but she did in many ways ask for it, in that she was able to work and put us in a nursery school. But I think about our community and the fact that neighbors shared their food, shared their time and the things that they knew. And I think out of that, one of the good things for me was that I learned that I always felt very good about sharing anything I had. And I still do, and I always have. And I also have to say, I was thinking about the fact that I had an aunt who did very well during the Depression. So she liked buying me clothes. And that made me feel apart from people, because I thought most people didn't have the kinds of clothes I had. And I felt guilty about it. And I remembered that the Salvation Army came around for donations, and she had just bought me a new winter coat and hat, and I gave it to them because I thought that other children should have it, because I had another one. Wow. And so I didn't like the fact that we didn't always have food. I mean, I would eat oatmeal for anything now, because that was my mother's favorite dish. I guess the only one she couldn't really afford to give us. Those are the kinds of things that went on.
And you, Frances, you don't eat oatmeal today, is that correct?
No, because I do not. No, I do not.
You had enough during the Depression.
I
Fair enough. And you said that your mother never knew that you could cook dandelion greens.
No, that was one of the neighbors. As I say, the neighbors helped and they shared dinners and food. And one of the neighbors, who was Italian, taught my mother that dandelion greens were very good and very healthy and tasteful. And so we learned that. I think my mother learned other things from other ethnic neighbors, like she loved pig's feet. I can't remember all the different things that we learned, but it also helped my palate, because I was always, and still am, willing to try anybody's diet.
Well, that's a positive. For those people, I should mention that, first of all, that you grew up in Massachusetts and you were an Irish-American. Connecticut.
Connecticut,
and you were part of an Irish-American community.
Correct.
Right. So I wanted to ask you, Frances, for those people renting or buying their first home, what was it like for you to move to New York City during World War II? What were your accommodations like?
Oh, I came to New York City. I loved it. I had dreamed since I was 12 of coming to live in the city. And I lived in a convent while I went to school. And that's where I first came, in Hell's Kitchen.
And then you shared you said you shared a cold water flat with two other girls.
Oh, well, after I got out of school, I did. I shared a cold water flat in the village with two other girls.
And you had to carry the oil heaters up five flights?
Oh, no, the kerosene, yes, we had
kerosene. The kerosene.
Which was not very adequate, but it was fine.
Your rent was what, $21 a month?
Yeah, that's what it was. And the odor of the kerosene was not the best, but we managed to do without it, with it, and we had a bathtub in the kitchen. And in living in that, interestingly enough, friends did not like to walk up five flights and find out we weren't home. So there was much yelling from the street, Francis, or Ricky, or Jackie, are you there?
Well, currently you live on the 16th floor, but you have an elevator, so that's a small mercy. And back that, to put it in perspective, you could get a whole meal, you said, at Father Divine's in Harlem on around 155th Street for 35 cents.
Correct.
And a seven-course meal for 55 cents. So
correct.
People are concerned about inflation today, so that puts it a little in context, I suppose. Francis, people are working remotely and they're more likely to be able to switch careers, or maybe they need to change jobs and take on a different role due to the pandemic. And you've had many different careers in your lifetime, showing that you don't have to be pigeonholed into one career. So can you just quickly talk us through a few of those jobs you've had during your life?
Well, I started out acting, but while I was acting, while I was attempting to act or get acting jobs, I did things like window display work, which was a very used part of my creativity, and I liked that very much. I worked a good part of my life. I did fundraising. I worked as an editor of a chemical journal. And I also worked, I have the last part of my life, I worked for a nonprofit organization that was found housing for in a program that's called 80-20, but it was for affordable housing, because some of the things they did was to build their own places or fix over other houses. And I did like that. It made me feel that we were at least trying. I also worked in an organization that tried to help people hold on to their brownstones or keep the brownstones in the city, the five boroughs, keep them from being destroyed and developers from taking over.
So, Francis, do you have any advice? What would be your one piece of advice for somebody starting a job or considering a job switch or choosing a new career?
What would be my advice?
Yeah, if you had one piece of advice for somebody who was starting, if I was starting a new job.
You know, I went into all of my new jobs with curiosity, with an enthusiasm for them. For instance, I went into one job that was working for the Girls Club, which I thought would be very good for me, and I had enthusiasm for it. And then I realized that it wasn't the answer for me. And so I was able to be as honest about it to myself and to others, and resign and not try to be upset and angry and blame others because it was me. It just wasn't the right match for me.
Right. So listen, learn, and have a little humility, I think is what you're...
Oh, I'd like to get a lot of that. a lot of that would help.
So now to some meat and potatoes. Frances, what was the best financial decision you've made in your lifetime?
I guess the best one made with my husband, and that was buying a house in Manhattan.
And that was a brownstone in Hell's Kitchen that you bought in, 1977 for $100,000?
Correct.
But then after you bought it, what did you do with it?
Well, then it was a gutted house, and we had planned to make co-ops. And we did. We made four co-ops. And it worked out very well for us and for others.
And I guess you were building there before the gentrification of the neighborhood, and anybody buying a house, of course, timing is everything, right?
Well, yes.
And you also said that you did very well when you built a property on Block Island.
Correct.
So
I wouldn't say that the financial return on that was very good. No, that was not one of the better movements.
So that brings me to my next question, which is actually from a listener, Simon. What was the biggest financial mistake you've made, and would things have been different if you hadn't made it?
Well, the biggest financial mistake I made was to say to the person I had asked to help me manage my money that I wasn't really clued in about money, and that I needed someone to watch over me and help me. And with that, I did not pay attention. I did not try to learn about it. I did not check up on the person. And it was a rather disastrous for me. But that would be the best advice I could give anybody is, when you have somebody taking care of your money, be sure that you also do some of the work. Check on them, learn what they are doing and why they are doing it, and whether it will help you in the future or in the present.
Right. So whether it's, no matter who recommends the financial advisor, and regardless of their good name, you're saying you need to be accountable for the money yourself and not to put all of your trust into one organization or indeed one person.
Right.
So, but you're still here and you live comfortably. And I wanted to ask you what age you retired.
When I was 85, but the last maybe 8 years of my life, I only worked part-time. I worked 3 days a week and not whole days, 10 to 4. But I am very happy I did.
Wow. Because a lot of people, Francis, you know, they want to try and this whole FIRE movement where people want to retire early and have financial freedom. But you, so why did you choose to work until you were 85?
Well, I chose to work because I felt that I'm one of those people who needs structure in her life. And working, and I'd like being around people, especially being around people who are younger than I was, because I felt we could help one another, teach one another. And that was important for me. And when I always had time to do volunteer work. In the last 8 years, I really had more time and I could volunteer at some of the things that I was interested in.
Right.
Like before children. I loved that.
And before you lost your eyesight, you used to like riding your bike around New York. And that was probably, and you like to collect meat from one place and vegetables from another.
Yes, because New York City at that particular time had all the different ethnic neighborhoods and you could ride around and pick up what you wanted when that in one neighborhood you might find they had better spices and other meats that you might want, different vegetables. So I had a passion for cooking.
So it sounds like you still have a sort of a thriftiness maybe rather than a frugality when it comes to your spending habits. And I wonder if that is true and whether it's related to growing up in the Depression, being your formative years.
Oh, no, I don't think so. I think it came when I had the financial fall. But I also have to say that what that brought to me was the comfort and a freedom. Because now I spend my life making choices. Do I need something? Is it just a want? Is it a want that might add to my life? Or is it just simply a want? And I'm very comfortable with that. And I find it, and I feel a kind of freedom. I don't feel that I think before I had no structure in what I did with my money. And I think I am somebody who needs that. I need to know what I am doing and why I am doing it.
Right. And it sounds like in terms of investing, the biggest, your most successful ventures were with property, but what you said about your financial advisor, not with the stock market.
No.
Would that be fair? That's a fair.
That would be very fair.
Right. Did that leave you? We have a question here from from Hao about the stock market and Lee about investing. So did that leave you feeling, did you feel burnt after, you know, people have, obviously we've had a lot of major corrections in the stock market of late, but did that experience leave you skittish about investing again in the stock market?
Absolutely. But the not with the stock market, with myself, and with my not being good at it and not willing to participate as I should. And I have to explain to you that at one point I was married to a man who was a stockbroker, and he was also a financial writer. So it's pretty odd that I didn't catch any of his interest.
Interesting. So James asks, Francis, what is the secret to your longevity?
Oh, I really have, I don't know that, except I think I lived a day at a time and I just took life as it came. And in some place I was given a lot of strength, really. And some place I think I always was able to dig up a little more hope that things would be different, hope that I would be able to do things differently.
Right. And you spoke about, yesterday we had a bit of a pre-interview, and you had talked about when you purchase things, about your spending, that you make sure you buy quality. I've always admired your sense of style and your clothing. And it's interesting that you said you only buy quality things, that you'll spend a little more, be it whether it's shoes or a jacket or even an oven toaster oven.
Well, yes. Now, that is one of the things my mother gave me from her experience in the Depression. My mother always said that you should buy the best quality. Now, it usually, for instance, with clothes. I remember when I first came to New York, I had a very small wardrobe, but everything was top-notch in fabric and style. And she took me to 14th Street and said, never buy anything here because it's not going to last and you will be bored with it. It'll fall apart and you'll be back a week later. And in the long run, it costs much more. And I have always done that. And if I have to save to buy the quality of boots I want, then I save till I get it. But I have always bought, and they have lasted me for years and years. So economically, it's worked out better for me to pay a lot of money for things and make sure they were the best than it would if I just bought. And the other thing I remember being taught was when we were doing houses, and we did do three, was to, when you are getting a bid, it usually is wisest to take the middle one, because one that is lowest probably can't give you the best work, and the one who is charging too much is probably doing it over. And it worked out.
So. Interesting. So we have a message from Rita here saying, you're phenomenal and my new hero. I'm in my 60s, recently retired and looking for the next adventure. I too am a knitter and a fiber artist, always educating myself on my financial investments. So that's a nice message from Rita. Francis. And I think, you know, you've given people a lot to think about in terms of, you know, you've taken risks in your lifetime in terms of financial risks. You know, buying a house at Brownstone is a huge risk, but you did it. And you were obviously very involved in that process from the ground up.
Right.
But then you had learned lessons about the stock market, but you didn't blame the stock market. You looked at your own, you took accountability for what you could have done differently, right?
Right.
So I think that's good, probably good lessons for everybody these days. And I know that at the very beginning of the pandemic, we spoke and I wrote an article where we were, I quoted you in it last year, and you're 96 this year, you were 95 last year, of course. And I asked you, we talked about the coronavirus and COVID, and you said, "Quentin, I'm 95. Do you think I'm scared of coronavirus?" And I really liked that.
Right. Well,
I really thought that was a great attitude.
Yes. And I wasn't frightened in the AIDS epidemic either. Only frustrated that I couldn't be of more help.
Right.
Much more.
And I think that's a great...
I also know that a good deal of my interest was, I have always been very involved in politics. That was another thing that kept me, made the adventure good for me.
Right, right. So you've been involved in civil rights and politics and volunteering. There's a huge, I'm noticing a huge volunteering theme throughout your life as well. So for anybody who wants the secret to longevity, maybe being of help to other people is one of those secrets. But Francis, I really want to thank you for your time today. It's really been very illuminating, and it's great to talk to you and have a perspective on the time that we're living in, and people can, you know, apply some of the lessons from your life to their own. But that is all the time we have today. So thank you, Francis, and it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Quentin.
My pleasure, Francis. And thanks to all of the audience for tuning in and for your questions. Really appreciate it. Please join us tomorrow. Kraken's Jethika Chow will be speaking with Financial News about one of crypto's most controversial markets and how professional traders stay ahead of the armchair game. Thank you for listening. Stay healthy, stay safe, and have a great day.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ.